Okay, we're going to get started here. Good afternoon. My name is Atif Malik. I'm part of the Citi Specialty Semiconductor and Semicap Equipment team. It's my pleasure to welcome Bob Halliday, CFO of Applied Materials, to the keynote session. Bob, just to kick it off, to the extent that you can talk about a merger update, I know you guys are restricted by regulators and lawyers to some extent, but if you want to make any comments on the merger update, then we'll start the Q&A.
Sure, I am pretty restricted because we're in the middle of the review process. What little color I can give you is just about the logistics and mechanics, which a lot of people are interested in. We're having reviews in about six countries still. Probably the most time-consuming in terms of documents and discussions tend to be places like the US, China. We said on our conference call about 4 weeks ago that our goal was to close the transaction by the end of the calendar year. That remains, we haven't updated that. And we're committed to getting the transaction closed.
Okay. I'm going to start off with some of the sector level questions, and then we'll dive into AMAT specific questions. If you can talk about your latest assessment of 2014 wafer fab equipment outlook. You guys have talked about 10 to 20% year-over-year growth, and then strength continuing into 2015. Any kind of update on that?
Yeah, so there's some people use different base years for 13. The number we use is, I think DataQuest was 27.4 billion of wafer fab equipment. We've been 10 to 20% pretty much all year. If you asked a point estimate, maybe 31.6, which is almost exactly 15% up. If you ask me about next year, which you just did, a good guess would be 33.5, which I think is pretty close to most consensus, including DataQuest. And I think it's a pretty fair guess. If you ask me over under versus 33.5, I might be a little bit on the over. I think it might be a little bit more than that, but one of the ones that's tough to predict is timing on a couple of these technology transitions between FinFETs transition for foundry and logic and the VNAND transition for NAND memory. Those transitions will drive incremental capital spending if they move faster, or a little less if they move slower. We think both of those are pretty positive next year.
Good. Maybe I'll start off the foundry trends. If you look at the economics of the Moore's Law, Bob, incrementally nodes are costing more, it's getting more difficult to add capacity. Are there going to be more or less active nodes, say, 3 years from now for the foundries?
That's a good question. I thought you were going to ask me a different question, so I'll wander into your question. I think the cost pressure for foundries is probably picking up a little bit, but I think if it picks up a little bit more, is my suspicion, below 14 nanometer. So I think they're 14, 16. So I think they're okay now. Now the question will be, how many nodes do they keep alive, and does the trailing edge stay bigger longer? In other words, does the market segment, the question I get asked a lot is, will the market segment between leading edge devices and the leading edge phones, and the Chinese phones might be lagging edge, more cost competitive for devices. That's possible. I think it's a couple of years out is my guess.
Okay. With respect to the foundry spending, one of your peers, KLA Tencor, they posted a pretty big order for a 14 nanometer foundry project in the June quarter. And I'm curious if you've seen the same strength, and when you look into the funnel of tier two foundries, in terms of timing, are they more late this year or first half of next year kind of a story in terms of spending?
Yeah, we received strong orders similar to that. And that is sort of a second tier foundry, a strong foundry, but not the top one or two. And we think they're going to be spending money this year. The rate of that ramp is probably a little bit later in this year.
Okay. And then your foundry positioning is fairly strong, particularly at TSMC. If you look at the MOPS data, when we look at it and we cut it over the last 5 years, after ASML, Applied Materials has shown the fastest growth in terms of gaining share at TSMC. Can you talk about some of the drivers or the products that are giving you that growth?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if you look at it, we think we had our largest market share in leading edge foundry in Taiwan last year. And I think we had our biggest Taiwan orders last year. So Taiwan and the largest foundry there was really positive for Applied. Some of the things that helped us were some of the inflections on the devices. Metal gates went in, which is, we have PVD tools that are very good for metal gates. Epi tools are being used significantly at foundries, all the foundries. So those inflections played very well for us, and those cut in at 28, 20, and some of them continue very strong into FinFETs too. So the inflections around the device have helped us a lot. And then we're getting qualified on some new tool sets there also. So we feel pretty good.
And then moving on to the memory space, you guys are talking about 30% year-over-year growth for this year for memory spend. On the NAND side, 3D NAND has kind of gone through hype and then kind of reality check in terms of economics versus 2D. Where are we in terms of the second wave of 3D NAND spending? You expect that to happen next year, or are we getting pushed out?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the transition from 2D, I'll say 2D to next generation 2D versus 2D to first generation 3D, and then the transition from 3D to second generation 3D. So let me tell you why I'm looking at it that way. If you look at the transition from one generation 2D to the other, for years, there's been significant bit growth just by 2D scaling. I think 30 to 70% over the years. It varies node to node. So there wouldn't be huge CapEx spending to get bit growth. And a fair amount of the CapEx spending was lithography enabled because the critical dimensions were shrinking. There's three challenges that are really emerging. One is the cost of that 2D scaling is getting higher. Two, the technical challenges are getting higher because, or tougher because these critical dimensions are so small, and related to that, reliability starts to become a question. Because at those nodes, you're talking about 8 electrons per cell, 8 to 10 in terms of storage. So how reliable is it? How tough is it to do that? Now, if you go to 3D devices, instead of 2D, greenfield to greenfield, the cost probably goes up a little bit. Now, the cost probably goes up more in the first generation capital cost because of a different tool set. It's more around deposition and etch. So it's probably a little bit extra capital outlay for the first generation. But some of your issues about reliability, technical challenges start to become better. And then your cost issues become noticeably better when you go to second generation 3D, because a lot of the tool set they have to buy for first generation 3D, noticeably around deposition and etch, they can start to reuse those tools at second generation. And if you went from a 32-layer 2D to a 64-layer 3D, rather, you get very good bit scaling, capital intensity goes down, and more tool reuse. So in terms of the competitive situation between customers, I don't think any of our customers want another one of our customers to get to second generation 3D before they get into first generation 2D, because I think the cost advantages at second generation 3D start to become more interesting. So I think 3D is going to happen. The analogy I use, I think of the 3D transition is more like a wafer size transition than a nodal transition. Because in nodal transitions, they change a couple of things out each node, and they're getting basically the same architecture and scaling. If you think of a wafer size transition, you know that it's basically gonna happen, 200 to 300 or 300 to 450 once they're committed, but it's gonna be pretty much a new tool set. So VNAND, when you see all the challenges, whether it's technical reliability or commercially coming on the roadmap, you can see 3D happening. The question is when, and it's a pretty new tool set. So it's going from a lot of reuse for deposition etch and 2D scaling to a fair amount of new tool sets for deposition etch for 3D. And the question is just timing. Now, I'm not too wrapped around the axle on timing because is about 1.3 million wafer starts per year in NAND around the world. And if it transitions over 5 years, I'm happy to have pretty strong predictable revenues over a five-year period.
Okay. And moving on to the DRAM side, the DRAM pricing has been quite stable so far, and memory makers are acting very rationally. In terms of spending, how do you see your funnel for DRAM into second half?
Yeah, so if you looked at our year, we've actually kept our forecast of wafer fab equipment for the year is pretty damn tight, 31.6 basically all year. But if right before our last call, earnings call, we had increased our forecast for DRAM a little bit for the year, calendar 14, and decreased NAND a little bit. As you said, the NAND stuff slipped out a little bit. We stayed at the same total. So we've upped our DRAM a little bit on this year. Now, next year, we say that VNAND has a higher percentage growth than DRAM, but or NAND has a higher percentage growth than DRAM. But my guess is there's a little bit of upside opportunity in DRAM because I think the end user demand's pretty good. I think customers will be very fiscally prudent with capacity additions. But my guess is it's a little bit of an opportunity.
Okay. And then on the market share for the memory segment, you guys have talked about gaining 2 points of share this year in the memory segment. And I'm curious if that is coming from NAND or DRAM, and if it's just kind of maintaining existing market share or gaining incremental market share on the 3D side, and which products are gaining the market share.
Yeah, it was on NAND more than DRAM, and it was around etch, most etch and deposition.
Okay. Bob, if I look at Applied Materials history, when we went through the copper migration from aluminum, it was a big hit for AMAT in terms of outperforming the market. When I look at low-k dielectric transition, is a big hit. So every time we've seen materials change, it has benefited Applied. And Gary's mantra has been precision materials engineering. So when I look at 16 and 14 nanometer and even 10 and 7 nanometer, and you look at all the elements in the periodic chart, how do these inflections help Applied Materials outperform the market?
Yeah, I think it's pretty advantageous for Applied. One of the primary general enabling things for the roadmap has just been 2D scaling. You know, the mantra is that if you make it smaller, it'll be better, faster, cheaper. Making it smaller is getting tougher and tougher in two dimensions. So what you see with customers, and you see it and you hear it in their quotes, the two things they're also working very hard on now is 3D devices, FinFET and VNAND, and materials modification or materials changes. Now, materials changes narrowly is thought about just more materials or different materials. For instance, we just introduced a cobalt CVD tool, which is going to grow our addressable market and revenues. But the other things I think about more broadly in materials modification is there's more films, there's more layers in the stack, and they're thinner layers generally. So cross wafer film quality, uniformity, and all the interface layers between these things is a big deal. So some of these you may have to harden them because they're thin, so that's thermal processing, interface layers, change the materials. So this whole bag of opportunities and tricks around materials, it looks pretty robust and has a long road map. In other words, I don't know how many generations they can go taller and skinnier, but they can change materials, whether it's literally changing the materials or the interface layers or modifying the materials, whether it's implant or epi or thermal. You can see a lot of roadmap on that stuff. So I think it's going to go on for a while. It'll play very well for Applied. If you look at deposition etch, VNAND is deposition etch. You look at FinFETs, it's all multiple layers, things like epi kicking in.
Right. And this question on the EUV, ASML was here yesterday, and they updated the investors that their second customer is running endurance test of 600 wafers per day. And it's very difficult for an average investor to kind of keep track on the readiness of EUV, but the perception out there is ASML wins on EUV and everyone else loses, maybe with the exception of KLA, but clearly it could be a negative for AMAT and Lam, but that's not entirely the case because you guys benefit from multiple patterning, and then you have 3D NAND, which has nothing to do with EUV. So when you talk to your customers, and you're very much a part of the EUV ecosystem, what are you seeing in terms of, you know, pull and push on the EUV? Are you guys, are they pushing you to work on the resist or the ALD process that kind of goes along with the EUV? What kind of feedback you're getting from your customers on the EUV?
Well, customers, I think, have been pulling and investing in EUV for a number of years now, and they very much like EUV productivity to improve. You can read that every day, and ASML talked about it. So it's just, it's getting EUV to work productively and good productivity, and ASML knows that better than I do. Now, cutting that in is a little bit of lead time, right? Because you have more or less patterning steps, what's the overlay, what's the integration scheme. It takes a little bit of lead time. So the point is that in my window of revenues that I talk about, I don't see a big direct impact in my window. Now, a little bit longer term, could be, right? The second thing is, the thing it would probably mostly affect is patterning, right? So at the node it kicks in, it's probably still 2D, double patterning, even with EUV, which might mean it's pretty good for both patterning people and lithography people. The third issue is that patterning is a little bit more etch intensive than deposition intensive in terms of weighting. And our etch gains have not been around patterning so much, been more around, you know, VNAND and memory and things like that.
Okay. Just want to focus on the share gains. You know, Applied Materials gained 1.4 points of shares in the silicon segment and 4 points in display in 2013. I mean, in terms of your organic share growth for next year, you know, in which products are you focused on mostly for share gains?
Yeah, in 2013, there's three different ways you could look at market share. One is your percentage of a customer's total pocketbook. And so their WFE spending is the revenues for our industry. And of that total pocketbook, we gained 1.4 points. We went from, I don't know, 17.9 to 19.3, I think, 93%. And so that was the first time we'd gained in a few years. Now, if you look at our address, our served addressable market, where it's just everywhere we compete, and that would exclude lithography and track and MOCVD, I think we gained about 2 points, right? Because litho actually outgrew our markets somewhat last year, right? So we did even better at where we compete. And then if you look where we specifically compete, I think in every single one of our product groups, etch, inspection, PVD, implant, RTP, CMP, except CVD, we gained in every one of those market share, except CVD we lost, okay? So overall, market share was pretty good last year, particularly when you drill into the details by product. For 14, we're probably a little bit more cautious than that because some of the mix issues are a little bit different this year. Now, how we gained in 14 is interesting. We really hustled to get some new iterations of things like etch chambers. We did applications works on inspection. And then we gained share at places like foundries and things like that with epi tools, as I said, metal gates with PVD. But we didn't have a lot of wind at our back for new products because we started investing more heavily in SSG products, equipment, semi-equipment products in middle of 2012. And it's really about a three-year window to turn those into revenues. You develop the tool, get it D2R position, ship it, then get it revenued. So the potential revenue gains from that new product introductions we've been pushing for the last couple of years are really more in 2015. So if you look at our financial model, if you look at 2012-13, at similar revenue levels, we're investing about 4 points more in R&D, particularly in SSG, than we would at similar revenue levels historically. And then we haven't yet realized those revenue gains in market share. Those are more in 15, right? So we kind of had wind in our face on the financial model, but we were able to increase gross margins and operating margins kind of just by hustling, right? Next year, we're hopeful that some of these inflections we talked about, VNAND and FinFET, things like that, and the back end of line interconnect stuff's getting interesting too. Those inflections, combined with some of these new products we're pushing, will be an opportunity for share gains in 2015 for Applied.
Bob, in terms of execution, it just feels like the company is executing a lot better than historical trends. I mean, your operating margins have increased over the last 7 quarters, and you guys are talking about 6 points of operating margin improvement for the full year. Can you talk about what's driving the improved execution, and especially in terms of balancing your OpEx has come down, but you've moved the dollars from SG&A to the R&D line. And can you just talk about how you juggle that OpEx in the context of better execution?
Well, there's sort of a three-part steps, right? One, you have to say, what are your clear priorities? And then you have to get everyone in the company agree with the priorities and the metrics. And three, you just grind it, right? And so when we, the management within the last couple of years that Applied, we said, we looked at the markets and we said the SSG and display markets are attractive. The solar market, unfortunately, is not an attractive market at that point. And the AGS business, we thought we could leverage more effectively. So we said we're going to aggressively move money from solar, which was losing about $150 million a year, to semi and display into profitability. And then we're going to focus within the spending, we're going to spend much more on products and less on SG&A. So we moved about 5 points from SG&A to R&D, the products I talked about. And we moved money out of solar and got it to break even from about $150 million loss 2 years ago, I guess, to break even. And we've increased the gross margins, 7 quarters in a row or something. And operating margins have trended up for the last couple of years, but that's without the new lift on the revenue. So what did we do? We set the priorities and got everybody bought in. And then we said, well, the data is that we're not the most efficient in the world. So we're big on benchmarks. So if you show people detailed benchmarks of the most efficient companies in the universe by all the functions, finance, HR, legal, sales, manufacturing, supply chain, you see, you guys want to be the best. You got to drive this cost curves. So, and then what we do is just grind it every quarter. We meet every quarter and say, okay, we got to drive this cost down here, here, and here. It's not very glamorous, but, just grinding away.
I see. Bob, on your combined TEL plus AMAT target model, you guys have talked about more than $2 in EPS is $37 billion WFE model. But at the Semicon West event, you mentioned that internally you're working on the assumption that even if the WFE is more flat to $32-$33 billion level, you can deliver some of the OpEx synergies and share gain targets that you've set. I just want to clarify that comment and what are the internal assumptions you're currently operating at?
With the merger.
With the merger, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll give you the data points. This past year and the previous year, July of 2013, we set up the financial model for Applied, and the base year we were operating off was 2012 Applied. So we said Applied in 2012 had 17.7% market share, or 17.9% with used equipment. And we said we'd get up to about 20.1% with the used equipment, 19.9% just with the new equipment, SSG. And we got to 19.1% last year. We said we'd get to 20.1%. So we got about 65% of the way there on that line. We said we'd grow the service business and the solar and display businesses. We're mostly on track. We're a little behind on service. We're pretty much on track with the other three, equipped semi, solar and display. I think in service we're making pretty good progress, and I think we'll catch up, but we're doing okay. Gross margins in 2012, we were at 41%. We said in a $30 billion model, we'd get to 44%. In a 33.5, we'd get to 45%. Last quarter, we did 45.5, so we're up about 4.3 points last quarter from full year 12. So theoretically, we're already beating our 2016 model, except we had about 0.8 of a point one time. So we really did about 44.7 last quarter. I think we're a little lower than that, normalized. But I kind of think we'll meet or beat the model. The model's 44 to 45, so about 44 and a half for the environment we're in today, which is 31.6. Spending, we said we'd get to 2.2, and we're about 2.2 now, so we've got to manage inflation. We're a little over that, but we can probably manage around that. Taxes, we said we'd get to 22% for applied, and we're trending down there. We'll get there. So the applied model gave us 23% operating margins, I think it was, or at $30 billion. We didn't post a $30 billion model for TEL. We posted a 37, and we said it'd be 25% operating margins in 2017, a year later. So remember, applied in 2016 said we'd do 25 or 26 at 37, and 23, I think it was, at 30. So you would think at 30 billion Tokyo Electron plus Applied should be similar operating margins. So I'm not giving you a model, but most people say, why wouldn't it be about the same? Make believe 23, right?
Right.
So we posted a $37 billion model for investors last September when we announced the merger for the combined company. But the next day we started working only on a $30 billion model with TEL. So all the synergies, all the infrastructure cost, all the discussions around a $30 billion model and achieving attractive gross operating margins at that model. Because if you can size the cost structures at 30, then you're okay at 33 or 35 or 37. And the critical thing is to make money cross-cycle in this industry. So if you size your cost structures appropriately, you can scale up or down. So I think we should achieve margins like that.
Got it. Now, the Tokyo Electron integration process, you guys have talked about three things, scale, alignment, and speed. I get the scale that the two companies getting together. Alignment, I'm sure you guys have some dialogue on which products make sense. Dielectric etch, you know, Tokyo Electron is stronger. You know, conductor etch, Applied Materials is stronger. But in terms of speed, one of the questions I get asked by investors a lot is, Japanese companies traditionally, historically, have been a little bit slow to move. What changes are you making internally to the structure to better align the R&D services and operations to make sure that the company itself is nimble to react to the inflections?
Well, in any organization, whether it's your company, your sports team, or your religious affiliation, or your family, the first thing you have to do is get people to agree there's a need to change. And so, or they want to change. So I think if you go look at most of the people in TEL are excited about growing their company and growing and winning, right? People like to win, right? So if you look at the economy in Japan, it's been kind of slow for the last number of years. So for all the young people in Tokyo Electron who will probably work at Tokyo Electron their whole careers, a vibrant, growing company is a very exciting thing. And so I think they're excited, and the leadership of Tokyo Electron, about merging with Applied and growing the company. Because our vision is to grow the company. Gary's fundamentally a growth guy, right? I'm sort of the blocking and tackling type guy, right? So that vision of growth energizes people to change, right? So then you go to, okay, now I'm, in fact, they have an expression for waku waku, I think, exciting and exhilarating, energizing change. So once people are bought into, let's change, then you say, well, what change is good? Moving faster is a good thing. So then you start to implement it. So Gary meets with the Tokyo Electron folks every other weekend. We're always doing a weekend. Because we're in a hurry. And several of the techniques we use in the company are alignment, as you said, and speed. And the way we drive speed is we set up a rhythm of the business. Every month we have monthly product reviews. Every quarterly we have quarterly business reviews. Every quarter we have quarterly resource allocation meetings, which is basically zero-based budgeting. And many companies do things like this, but we're kind of relentless on it, right? You got to have it. If you show up for the meeting you're not ready, we'll come back at 5 o'clock Sunday and do it, right? Because just every month, every quarter, this is how we make decisions. This is how we do it. And you just, the meetings are going to happen every month. The meeting's going to happen every quarter. The decisions are going to be made. if you're not ready to make the decisions, that's all right, we'll come back at midnight. So you just set a whole routine for the company that's fast-paced, and we're going to live to that pace.
Got it. I'm going to see if there are any questions in the audience. We have microphones at the back. If you have a question, please raise your hand.
We only want fast-paced questions, though.
Hey, Bob, question for you. As we scale down further and further, is there any difference when it comes down to flash annealing or laser annealing the wafer? Are there difficulties when that starts to occur? What do you see?
That's a good question. So if you do cross cuts of wafers, right, it's hard to see annealing, right? Because, so leading edge customers, you're not 100% sure what they're doing because it's not like materials, you can see the materials. But what we speculate is that when they have these thinner and thinner films, they're ruggedizing the film by annealing at temperature, right? You can better film quality, make it hardened, right? So my suspicion is there's a little bit more annealing going on than you know about, right? Now, number one. Number two, the thermal budgets on a lot of these are tougher, right? So you're either gonna have lower temperatures or shorter temperature cycles. So I think it's getting more challenging, the annealing stuff. In terms of total growth of the market, I think it's moderate. If you look at some of the VNAND stuff, they're doing some RTP annealing stuff, which is interesting. So my suspicion, it's similar to the market growth, and some of it you can't see.
Questions? Good. I want to talk about the services business. I know you like that business a lot, and you know, Ali has talked about a tighter coupling between Silicon Group and services. And you guys are projecting a high single-digit revenue growth for that business, and I just want to understand, you know, what's different that you're doing in the services to grow that business, and especially that part of business is at risk from more local and mom-and-pop shops kind of supporting that. So what are you doing differently?
Yeah, I think the service business is vastly underrealized by the equipment companies in general, right? So if you talk to any of the historical equipment guys, they are equipment guys in Silicon Valley mostly, right? So who's the early adopter of new equipment? Tends to be Intel, right? Intel is the very high use case for equipment. They need very high requirements for particle counts, stuff like that. And the early adopter drives you to use the local supplier machine shop in Silicon Valley because he's right down the street and you're used to him, you drive down there. The problem is Intel's cutting edge fabs, I don't know the number offhand, maybe it's 150,000 at the cutting edge stuff, 150,000 wafer starts maybe. You know, NAND is 1.3 million wafer starts, DRAM's 1.1 million, foundry's about a million. So the big aftermarket for spare parts and services is those markets. But once you lock in a supplier in Silicon Valley for Intel, and now you have copy exact rules within your company, it's hard to switch to low cost region supplier because the logistics of it, right? So what you have to do is qualify a so now you segment your parts, which is most of your service business, into commodity parts and high value parts. And for the commodity parts in particular, and that's particularly the stuff outside the process chamber, you have to early on, when you're speccing the equipment, try and get a lower cost region supplier so that you get the service business afterwards. Because if you look at our attach rate on brand new tools, it's sort of like 70% or something. But then it attrits down when it ships overseas because they get the replacement parts locally because they're cost effective. Now the customers would be happy to buy from us if our costs are in the ballpark. So if we had good costs, we could keep our gross margins, keep our revenues, right? So what's the point? I always joke with people, we only do 3 to 4 things for a living, including service for, but I'll make it really simple, 3 things. We design equipment, we make equipment, we sell equipment, right? Or we make, design, make, and sell stuff, right? The critical thing is to get upstream. A lot of you guys have heard my lecture series. The single biggest financial indicator for companies is speed and velocity. I don't like slow tech companies, because as long as your strategy is directionally right and you move faster than the other guy, you'll probably make money, right? So speed is the single biggest financial indicator, velocity of resource allocation, product development, installation time. Time is nonlinear economic value. It really is. Think of even time value of money, it's a square, right? So time is a big deal. So what's the point? If we only do three things for a living, design stuff, make stuff, sell stuff, the critical element in time is get upstream. The critical early design issue is, did you architect the tool right? Because if you get the wrong fundamental design or architecture, you're chasing your tail for 6 years, cost reducing and improving. It's like designing a three-wheel car. Once you ship that car, you're in the field all the time retrofitting the wheels, right? So the critical issue for manufacturing is get upstream on supplier selection. Because 85% of our cost is in the supply chain, 85% of our quality issues of suppliers, 85% of our lead time suppliers, 50% maybe the IP is in the supplier base. So you gotta get this supplier selection critical. And then the third is spec. You know, you gotta get clear specs with the customers when you sell stuff, right? So what's the point? I think the service business has been totally underrealized. I think it's a big opportunity. I think by what we've done is we put 20% of the bonus plan of SSG, the equipment guys, on the service business. So we said, your bonus depends on growing the service revenues. And then we dedicated sourcing people to low-cost region to get the parts. So I think what we hope to do is this attach rate on new shipments will stay higher, not attrit as fast, and the stuff that's out there won't as attrit as fast. The stuff that the horse is already out of the barn and running in the field, we won't get those parts back probably. But keeping the attach rate up front is critical. So you got to get upstream on the problem, get earlier.
Then on the display side of your business, how much visibility you have in the projects and the demand drivers there are, you know, 4K TV and stuff. So how much visibility you have in terms of the spending outlook for display?
Well, lead times for display tools are up to 9 months. I think we're trying to get them closer to 6, but 9 months is some of them, right? And we booked $600 million in orders the last two quarters combined, which was really big for us. That's a 1.2 revenue annual run rate. So we're not at a 1.2 normalized, but you know, we're pretty good. And we see big TV fabs in China. We see the smaller displays for cell phones and tablets growing too. The thing that's driving the TV growth, now we sell equipment for area, right? Is the TV unit growth is pretty good, but the TV sizes are getting bigger. They're growing about 2 inches a year, whereas they used to grow half an inch a year. So that surface area translates into more revenues for us. So my take, next year's an up year for us on display, on revenues. I'm worried about a hole a little bit later in the year, just because TVs still are cyclical, more cyclical than semiconductors now. The displays for smaller form factors, like for your phone and your iPad or whatever, they're not as cyclical.
Okay. And last one, the solar business, it's above break even, it's cash flow positive. Is there a revenue level at which you can start thinking about putting money in R&D spending and for that business, or are you just gonna wait for the demand to come back to a certain volume?
Actually, we have new products coming on solar. We got to break even, but we have new products come out in all three or four of the areas, four new products coming out actually. So we're hopeful that our revenues will grow in solar next year, a little bit weighted towards the back end of the year, because we have four new products.